Captain Legs Akimbo. Look for me. See my fingers.
Good evening, and welcome to Talk Truth Radio with your host, Dr. Rain Morgan. Dr. Rain Morgan is Mother Earth, and you can look forward to the next 3 hours of enlightening talk. What are the issues? More importantly, what are the solutions? We hold the torch. Together we stand. Now join Dr. Rain and this evening's guest. Open your mind and have a good time.
Good evening, and welcome to the Rain of Truth Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Rain Morgan, and we are all brought to you by Energy Enhancement System, Dr. Sandra Rose Michael, and we want to thank her, and we want to thank her company for making this possible this evening. Hey, hi, everybody out there listening to me. I think we have a really, really good show for you. Isn't that what was his name? I can't remember his name on TV. Ed Sullivan. He said, I think we have a really good show for you tonight. And I do. I think this one will just make you happy. You'll want to be glued to the internet. Want to bring on my guest this evening, the author of, I don't know, I think it must be a 4 or 5 pound book. It's called Life's Meaning. And our author and guest this evening has his own radio show on BBS, so we'll be able to have him, you know, give his show a little bit of advertisement there. So good evening, Niles, and thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I really appreciate this opportunity to meet all of your audience out there. Hi, everybody. And Also, just a small little fraction of a correction, it's life's hidden meaning, because the hidden part actually is hidden in the eye of the book.
But yeah, it's like, see that, life's hidden meaning. You know, I missed that.
Okay.
That's cool, I like that. Okay, so life's hidden meaning, dedicated to the advancement of consciousness in humanity. Yeah.
Yeah, that too.
That too. Well, I'll tell you, I looked at this book, and I thought, okay, there is so much. How much did you say this book weighs, Niall?
I think you hit it right on the nose. 4 to 5 pounds is about right.
4 to 5 pounds.
And you can measure the book by the pound in terms of how far you are in it. So that it's really a great, convenient way to determine how much you've read by the pound. You know, I actually had one, reader who cut the book into sections and just carried around that way. It's too heavy to carry otherwise.
Well, I love this book. I think it's fabulous. As I said to you, I would like to have you send a book into the men's prison. I think this will, just holding it, just touching it, will help to awaken people, help to give them, plant a seed in them that they might not otherwise wake up to for a long time. So what I would like to do, as I started to say, Niles, this book is huge. There are even levels of understanding. You even list the levels, the anticipated difficulty in understanding the book, as you call it, and or as you so have so aptly written in here. And I thought, okay, what is the best way to interview someone with a book like this? So I thought, okay, the best way is to start at the beginning. In the very beginning of your book, you start talking about the rays. So what I'd like to have you do to begin this, and then I'm going to go into the questions. You know, we're going to start with question one, and we're going to work our way through, get as far as we can, and then I'd like to have you back on the show.
Okay.
So we can continue. Does that
all
work?
All right. Well,
all right.
Sure. I mean, the questions. Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead. Sure.
Well, as I said, I'd like to start out with the rays, and
right.
I'd like to have you explain what a ray is, how many of them are there, and let's give a little bit on each ray.
All right. I think I can do that if you'd like.
Can you do that?
Yeah, sure. But well, first of all, I heard it. I don't know if that was just something from the radio, or was there somebody trying to get in? I don't know what the story is with that. But
I can hear some talking too.
Is somebody else on there, or is that just a beep going on?
No, there's nobody else on the show with me, so I'm not really
sure
what it is.
All right, we got a little bit of feedback.
Maybe our engineers are listening to us, and they can tell us. Why there's other voices.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few, aren't there? I can really hear them. I apologize, folks. Bear with us.
Yeah,
no, we can't hear anything.
Okay, you guys are not hearing any feedback, because I'm hearing a little feedback on my side, but maybe it's nothing. If it's nothing that you guys are worried about, then we're fine. I'm hearing it mostly when Rain is speaking, so I don't know what the story is. Maybe she's got something there. But that's okay, because I can speak through anything.
Okay.
Let me tell you this. Let's talk about rays. The best way to understand how existence is that part of the way existence comes about is through thought. In other words, thought itself is a thing, and we don't think of thought as a thing. And I'm completely abbreviating what I'm explaining, so I'm not giving a lot of whys, and I'm not going to go into the science about it, not unless somebody actually calls and says, hey, tell me more about that. And then they may squeeze it out of me, maybe. But at any rate, a thought is a thing because it comes from our choices, and it has to do with consistency of choice, and a choice having a direction and having an effect on the entire infinite field of choices that is all around us. In order for there to be thought, though, there has to be a being that can create thought. And so beings come from infinite fields in which some part of that field actually produces, self-creates itself into a being by actually producing thought that affects that whole field of choices. Now, that may confuse people, and, of course, even in itself, it's an extreme abbreviation. But if we look at what a ray is a field of thought that affects only energy. It doesn't affect anything else. It doesn't affect other people's thought, as an example. It doesn't affect people's ability to make a choice. It only affects the energy that exists around us. And in terms of living things, rays affect the chakras, those seven parts of human beings, and some animals and flowers and other things. There's less than seven. But the important thing is it affects the seven senses. I know most people think there's only five, but there's two additional ones in humans. And that's why we have seven chakras. And each chakra develops a sense because it's made out of a very specialized type of energy. It's very improved energy. And it's improved because four out of the seven are always reinforced by some greater beings who are focusing their thought on that type of energy on our particular planet at a time and developing the chakras that correspond to that. Not only in human beings, but in all of life. And so you see this cycle of life happening on a planet where certain types of species are developed in, we'll say, somewhat displacing other kinds of species that don't have the chakras as much being developed in them because they have chakras that are not in focus, not in ray focus at that particular time. It's an interesting science, and it adds to and actually has control over what we call evolution. Evolution is a wonderful thing, but it mostly produces life through forces, whereas these rays produce life through spiritual thought. And so you have evolution working under what we might say spiritual thinking, co-creating with evolution how life develops on a planet. And right now, a very interesting thing is happening, and that is that the throat chakra, which is called the third ray, and you might say, why is it called the third? Well, that's a little complicated, but I think it's important to realize they're just numbered from 1 to 7, and so this is the third. And the third ray is going, like, bye-bye, it's going out of focus. It's going to peak in 2012, and a lot of people say, oh, it's that 2012 Mayan calendar thing. Well, I don't know if the Mayans really had an inroad to God or not, but the point is that this thing was predicted thousands of years ago in various spiritual literature and hundreds of years ago in some more recent stuff. So it isn't like it's part of the popular stuff. It really goes back in time. And yes, 2012, the fall is when it's going to be peaking, and then it'll gradually from that point weaken and be replaced by a ray focus that's been out of focus since 1675 AD, and that is the fourth ray, which is the sacral center chakra. And so this is causing a lot of strain, a lot of changes in our planet, and unfortunately, it's not all for the good. Interestingly, the third ray builds civilization, which is a good thing, I think. Some people think it is. But it deals a lot with energy, mass production of energy, and the misuse of it, crystallization it's called, in people who are very selfish during this type of changeover, where someone is starting to feel that their throat chakra is not really working as good as it used to, isn't growing as fast as it used to, even though the ray is peaking. It's slowing down in its development and going to be replaced. And a lot of people are starting to sense that, and they don't like it, that have misused that kind of energy in their senses. Very interesting kind of energy, and it's one that at the present time is creating a lot of militarism. And the militarism is a real nasty thing that the third ray does. And our whole planet is under the development, we'll say, of the third ray, and so this makes our planet sensitive to the fact that this ray is going out of focus. So this is a tumultuous time. So I'm not getting that word out. Very good. And it's making us really difficult for us to be able to live. Are you there? I heard a lot of noise just now.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm hearing some.
Okay, how about this?
That's a little better.
Okay. So. For some reason, yeah. My phone was giving me a lot of feedback. Sorry about that, everybody. Okay.
Really?
What it sounds like is right now everybody's control issues are up in their face.
I would say that that's true, particularly of people who are more informed and affected by third ray energies. It has to do with their body types and also how much have they used that chakra in a selfish way. You know, we all have choices we make in our life. Do we live more selfishly or do we live more spiritually, more givingly, more lovingly? And those of us who are loving, that it may not really adversely affect us too much. Control could be still an issue for anybody. But people who are into this third ray kind of taking stuff, you know, maybe like some of the people in our government right now, it's a big issue. Yeah, they, you know, control, sure, absolutely. Because when you're selfish, you want to control but not be responsible. When you're soul-like, you want to be responsible and give up control. Very opposite kind of responses. Anyway, I yacked a lot there, so why don't you go?
No, I love that. You're doing a good job.
You started off with a huge question, you know, like, oh, my God.
Okay, now, I know it is a huge question, but you put it succinctly, and you did a really good job on that, Niles. You know, I should have started this interview out with you giving a little bit of background on how long it took for you to write this book. I'd like to have you tell folks, I have to tell you, I was absolutely amazed when you told me that you wrote the whole thing in longhand, that you don't use a computer. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, here several weeks ago, right in the middle of the radio show, I never said a word about this, Niles. Dr. Sandra Rose was here, we were doing the show live, and I spilled a glass of water over the top of my keyboard, my computer, my laptop, and I fried it.
Yeah.
4 weeks ago, I fried my laptop, and, you know, $1,700 Sony Vaio loaded to the hilt with everything went down the tubes in the middle of this radio show. And when you said, I don't use a computer, I thought, oh, my God, my whole life was on my computer, and you don't use one. You wrote this book longhand. So what was involved with writing this book? How long did it take you to do this?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the wowie part, I guess, but I write from a different state of consciousness. I try to be in a state called intuitional consciousness or Buddha consciousness, which is,
right.
Intuitional is different than mental because I'm able to see multiple causes and effects at the same time, and that's a very good thing. It sometimes is inappropriate in certain circumstances. Certainly if I was a lawyer or if I was trying to prove a mathematical theorem or something, it would not be an appropriate way of thinking. But in terms of the way that most of Life's Hidden Meaning is written, it really works. It worked quite well for me. You got to have controlled intuition to use it in that way. Controlled means like for many hours you can stay in this state, altered state, where you become virtually omniscient. Now, I feel very unhumble in speaking this way, but I am
describing what you mean
relatively accurately. Okay, so here you got this level of like omniscience. You know, that means I'm connected to other beings who are much more intelligent than I am, and I'm actually connecting to their causes and effects in their life, in their existence, to help me understand some causes and effects that I don't necessarily understand before I start writing, which is a good thing. So I'm learning as I write. You know, it's like I'm both the teacher and student at the same time. And so I wrote Life's Hidden Meaning. Now, this is going to sound a little bit hard to believe for our listeners because there's about 600,000 words in the book. But I wrote about 5 million words, and it took 7 years to condense it because the book became volumes of books, and it was impossible to publish. So in order to write that huge book that you've got, it took 10 weeks of my time, approximately, if you were to add up all the time that I spent on it. But then it took years and years and years to kind of make this thing all fit together. And for the people who are editing it to understand, you know, like, what is this guy saying, you know? Because, you know, it's not easy to understand the book. It's the concepts are very difficult to understand. I try to make it easier. A lot of pictures. Hey, right, you got to admit there's lots of pictures in the book.
There are pictures in the book. Absolutely. I like this one example of life on the first and second astral subplanes.
Oh, yeah.
You have a picture of a park and a dog and some trees and people hanging out in the gazebo. And this is awesome. This is just awesome. I love this book. I'm never giving this book away.
Well, don't. Please don't. But you can lend it to other people.
I won't.
But the idea of the book was really to try to explain some of the most difficult things in the universe in ways that a lot of people can gain something from. I wasn't trying to write, you know, Einsteinian relativity, although interestingly it is part of the book, but I wasn't trying to write something that would really impress scholars. I was trying to write something that would communicate and help to raise the consciousness of the reader. So that was what the point was. And so the book is a little different than most in that respect.
Yeah, this book, I have to tell you, folks, you really should own this book. And let me just throw this in there right now, Niles. How do we get to your website? What do we do to get a copy of this book?
Well, actually, some of the Borders and Barnes & Noble stores have the book or can order it. Depends on whether they actually have it on the shelf. It's so big, they don't usually have it on the shelf. I'll tell you that the reason is that most of their shelves are too small to hold a book.
Yeah.
So they either put it in the basement, or if they have one, or they put it in the back, or they put it up on the highest shelf. Those are usually the ones that will fit books that are 12 inches, you know, high. And that's where this book usually ends up if it is in the store. So it's difficult from that standpoint. You can go to agelesswisdom.com. It's all one word. And you can order a book directly from the publishers, which is kind of like me, but it isn't exactly. It's a group of people who believe in what's in the book and want to support it, and so they help to make sure it's available. But so it is available. And the good news is that the relative, what I thought was a high price for it, which was $40, has over the 7 years of time actually has, because of whatever inflation, et cetera, is, made it a little bit more, less expensive. And if you were to try to produce the book today, it would cost double that because it's got real, you know, cotton type, 25% cotton based paper in it. It's made as a textbook. It's made as a reference book. So the good thing is that it'll last hopefully a lifetime. It might take you that long to read it, though. So
it might take you that long. Well, I'll tell you what. When I saw the price was $39.95, I went, no way, this is a $75 book. What is in here literally makes it a $75 book. So $39.95 is, that's a score on a book like this.
Well, the other
yes,
thing
it
you
is.
Can also,
and
you can also get it,
your
you can
Ageless
also get it
Wisdom
Amazon.
Publishers in Tempe, Arizona. So if you want to contact the publisher, what do we do? How do we get to your, what's your website,
Miles? You can go to agelesswisdom.com. You can also go to Amazon. Amazon does carry it, and so they have their own copies, and they sell it. And as a matter of fact, we sell very few copies. I gave you agelesswisdom.com. That is the publisher. But by far, Borders and Amazon, et cetera, sell a lot, many more copies than we do. I mean, it's rare someone actually orders a book from us. I think they figure, well, you know, maybe this publisher won't sell me the book if I pay for it. You know, I don't know if they trust, you know, a lot of people prefer going with some place that they bought something from before, and that makes sense. And so they usually do go to either Amazon or they go to a border site or to one of the, like there's also BarnesandNoble.com, et cetera, and they order it from there. And,
okay.
Yeah, and that's I think BNM, Barnes & Noble is BarnesandNoble.com. And then there's Amazon.com. So for those who are interested also.
Okay. All right, Niles. Okay, I want to go back to the rays. Okay, now you say the first ray is the personality. The second ray is the mental mind. And you give an explanation. First ray personality, those who are actively involved in politics as policymakers, lawyers, litigators, land developers, promoters, surgeons. Okay, what do you mean by a first ray personality, a first ray mental mind? What does that mean?
Well, the rays affect everything about us, and they affect the chakras in each of the three bodies that human beings have, as we'll say, easy access to, which is the mental body, the astral body, and, of course, the physical or etheric physical or electromagnetic physical, depending upon what background people come from. And so there's these three bodies that have chakras in them. Each one of those bodies have seven different chakras. Each chakra is controlled by a specific ray, which just means the thought of a being enhancing that particular energy in that chakra sometimes. But besides that, the personality, which is like the subconscious part of us that really is the controlling aspect of a lot of people's lives, the personality also tries to direct us usually in vocational issues. So that also is affected by the ray because it's very energy related. Remember, the rays affect energy, and the personality is actually more of an energy part of us than it is a spiritual part. I know a lot of people think it's very spiritual, but it's actually not so much so. And
where do the rays come from?
Where they come from, beings that are much, much beyond human beings, that focus their attention at times on our solar system and on the planets within it. That's a very esoteric thing to talk about. I mean, these beings are like super beings, you might say. They're called cosmic ray lords, by the way. That's an official title, I guess. At least that's what
cosmic ray lords.
That's what they've been called for a long, long time, thousands of years. Even in Sanskrit, there's mention of cosmic ray lords or cosmic ray beings, I think is what they're called there.
Now, are these beings, are they now located? Well, I'm not sure exactly how to ask this question. I have wanted and have touched the Urantia material.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that material, the book Urantia?
Yes, I am. I had somebody on my program years ago who was discussing that. But go on. Yeah, go ahead. You have some questions.
Well, are these beings now living life in that part of the solar system that Urantia is speaking of?
Yeah, no, this is way outside of our solar system. You have to think of it in terms of, beyond even the size of a galaxy in terms of what these beings are in existence. They're almost like sub-gods of sorts. Of course, there's a god that created our universe, but these beings are about the next highest level. But there's a whole order of beings that fit within this ray issue. And some of them are not as advanced as the ones that created these original ray focuses, because there are many paths that superhumans can take beyond the human being. And some of those paths get involved with helping to develop planets, and one of the ways that planets are developed is by evolution being in, we'll say, competition with spiritual thought. And in lower animals, below human beings, and in lower life, we'll say, generally evolution is the controlling factor. Evolution is controlled by forces. So one force against another, and then whatever force wins, that's how evolution works. But when you get to spiritual development, where human beings have a choice to either live in an evolutionary way, where the forces control their life, or they can live more spiritually, in which case their thought controls life because it's more like God's thought. It isn't copying God's thought. It's adding to and creating more of it in themselves and in all other creatures in life itself and in God. So it's a wonderful thing. If we choose to live more spiritually, then we're basically helping to develop even some aspects of what one might call how rays work. And we're also helping to spiritualize everything else around us. If we live in a very forceful way, because we're selfish and because who in heck cares about anybody else, that type of thing, then evolution takes over. And oddly, we become victims to some extent of these ray issues. And like we talked about at the beginning of the show, what happens is that people then, as these rays move from one cycle to another, people get caught in that and they may react in rather bad ways. I think you're about ready to maybe go to a break.
I think we are about ready to go to a break. Thank you for being so... See, you do radio. You know how to watch the clock. I just want to say, before we go to break, please sit tight, because this is fascinating conversation, and we will return with Niles McFlower and Life's Hidden Meaning. I want to remind you, go to www.eesystem.com or call 877-777-9465. Take a look at the medallions, the Energy Enhancement System's new EE medallion. Dr. Sandra Rose Michael is pleased to announce an adjunct to her Energy Enhancement System. For those who are eager to experience a taste of this technology before purchasing a full system, EE medallion technology is for you. I wear one all the time. Just needed to tell you that. For those who presently own an EE system but would like the convenience of taking a piece of it with you wherever you go, Sandra has provided the perfect solution. So these are beautiful, kind of remind you of stone donuts, and they're held on a silk cord, and they are charged in the energy enhancement system. So it actually changes the molecular structure of the stone and has an effect, an energy enhancement effect on your body, affects you the way the scalar energy affects. So again, go to EE, well, go to this site, eemedallion.info at eesystem.com. Order one now. All right. And please sit tight. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Up the stairs, perhaps you'll become aware of different messages, different guidance or guides, teachers on each step. Perhaps you'll be presented with different gifts on each step. Allow yourself your experience on each of these steps as you go up. Feel your vibrations increasing. If you're confident in marriage, your vibrations will be increased sufficiently for you to step up onto the platform at the top and meet those guides.
Hey there, and welcome back. Thanks for sitting with us and listening to some scalar music. And go to the website if you're interested in the music that you are listening to. Check out the www.eemedallion.info at eesystems.com, and you can get information, or just the regular website, eesystem.com. Call them at 877-777-9465 or the website. The music is fabulous. Want to tell you folks, sit tight tonight. What a fabulous show we have. Not only do we have a wonderful man, Niles McClure, and his book, Life's Hidden Meaning, which is, this is fascinating stuff, but we also have the quintessential astrologer coming on at 9:30. Her name is Monica Lewis, and I will tell you that I have never experienced any astrological reading like this. This is called Sabian astrology, the Sabian symbols, and we're going to be talking about Mercury retrograde, and this is just fabulous stuff. I also want to remind you, in Dallas, Texas, and you can go to the eesystems.com website for this information also, 7707, that is July 7th this year, the Freedom of Life kickoff is in Dallas, and Dr. Greg and Dr. Sandra Rose Michael are going to be speaking. We had these folks on the radio show last week. We are talking about an insurance for people who want to use alternative medicine. This is a 25-year Fortune 500 insurance company that has put together a fabulous program, and you need more information on it. So please, please take a look at this. I'll give you more information on it in just a little while. So let's get back right now to Niles McClure and Life's Hidden Meanings. Hey, Niles. Okay, let's pick up where we left off. We were talking about where the rays come from, and this kind of stuff is difficult at best to grok, if you know what I mean. Our rays come from beings that focus on us.
Right.
Intermittently. Not all the time.
Well,
but once in a while.
Yeah, that's the point. At the present time, only 4 out of 7 are focused. So make it so that those who are creating the most amount of light don't really concern themselves about this focus or defocus of the rays, but those who need extra help and are actually being selfish do. And so the interesting thing is that this is like remedial issues, and it helps people who are actually oddly more selfish than not. It's a very strange thing, because if you're living like a soul, all the brave business doesn't really add up to a hill of beans, because you're just using whatever you need to use in terms of your senses, which are the chakras, and using your creative ability to do the best you can, the noble path, we'll call it. And in living so nobly, it really doesn't matter to those people what is going on, except that, unfortunately, surrounding them are people that are being grossly affected by the emphasis of some of their senses over others, especially when there's a change going on like there is right now. And that causes a lot of strife and kind of gets in the way of the whole civilization and produces a lot of problems. And we are definitely experiencing a lot of what would be expected. I wrote a paper, an article actually, called Two Scenarios for a Future World. I think I wrote it in 1992, and I predicted things that were going to happen in 2007 to 2009. And the weird thing is that they're all happening, and so that's a scary thing, because some of the things that are happening in that can come from that article are relatively negative. in the two scenarios, one was a very positive and the other one was the negative, and the negative seems to be kind of winning out right now. So that's the scary part, is that using the science of what would one would expect would change, the changes have been mostly negative, and more so than even the article itself thought would be a negative outcome. So that's the thing that's troubling, and I just hope it, I want to be wrong, especially about that article. I really would like to be wrong, because the it goes on in that same article, to, it goes through the whole century, actually, at least till the, I think, the year 2075. And if it turns as negative as the article is, and like I said, right now it seems to be more so than that, things got very bad, and they really were, the population, life decreases, the population of human beings decrease, and other kinds of life proportionately also decrease. We might only have, according to this article, as an example, by about 2050, 2060, we might only have 1.5 billion people left in the whole world. That's a very big decrease from the number of people that are alive today. Of course, one thing we won't have is population crises, and because there'll be very few people relative to the numbers today. But I'm hoping that that isn't going to continue, and that people will awaken and change some of the ways that they may be selfishly living at the present time.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk a little bit more, just briefly, about the rays, and then we'll move on. These beings that focus on that, on us, and give us these rays, I take it that they vibrate to certain resonances. I'm having about as easy a time with that word as you had with the word, I can't remember what it was, but whatever it was, we're not doing real good here on our big words. Resonances, I guess they resonate to levels that we would take in and then exhibit as, like you said, a writer or a judge or, you know, people who work in governments or contractors. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's the personality, right? For people's personalities, which respond very much like energy more than spirit, then people in that respect tend to be affected by the predominance of one of the seven types of energies in their personality. That's true. And
okay, so
yeah.
there is a personality ray and there is a mental ray.
Correct. There's a mental ray that affects the entire body, the monastic body. And so that ray dominates, and some people who will say have a well-developed mental body, who are good mental thinkers, will be dominated by the ray characteristic. Remember, it's a chakra in the mental body. So they sense more through that particular chakra, and they sense more accurately, usually. And so it has an effect on them. It's an interesting thing. It really has to do, this, all this is based upon perception and awareness. And perception and awareness eventually affects consciousness. So it's important to understand rays because it affects the perception and awareness of people.
What ray does someone like me, I'm a psychic healer, and by the way, I am www.drrainmorgan.com if you'd like more information about me. What does somebody who is a psychic healer, does radio, my entire life is lived to help to raise the consciousness of Earth, just like you. So what about you and I? What ray do we live in?
Well, the ray that dominates people in consciousness, as a ray focus, is the second ray. It deals with education, it deals with consciousness, it deals with love and givingness, and people oftentimes who are in that genre have a second ray either in their personalities, sometimes as a mental ray. It varies based upon how they're using it, and it's a little complicated. It's not so easy to determine. Most people take years in studying this stuff before they can figure it out for themselves, much less other people. But it helps to understand it in general because it tells you a lot about how other people around you may tend to be more inclined to function in one way over another, because perception then leads to oftentimes action in people's lives. So how we perceive things then leads to eventually how we might behave.
As we learn and grow, do we move through the rays, or are we, do we carry one specific ray, personality and mental ray, for our entire existence in this plane, this lifetime?
Well, I like to think that people who evolve themselves, grow themselves, I should say, beyond the subconscious elements of the personality, move away from the personality ray being a dominant factor in their life, and they become a more universal being who aren't as affected and aren't as concerned about what sense or senses are dominant in their bodies, and rely upon just those senses for most of their life activities, because then they're usually more self-focused. And if your life is really about serving others, then what sense you have that is better in one way or another is overruled by what senses you need to use to be of service to others. And usually it's the collection of all the senses, trying to do something called yoga or union with those senses, that provides the best results. But that also makes it much more difficult to live when one is not relying upon crutches such as the ray focuses of greater beings out there. Then one has to grow themselves more into being a greater person, a higher self, a soul. And in so doing, that means we're taking more responsibility for everyone around us, and we're not relying upon any crutches, and we're ignoring even the easy route, which might be actually to live our life more along the rays that we specifically have more developed within our senses, and instead just use whatever we have when it's needed appropriately for the best and greatest use for everyone else rather than ourselves. That's a good way to live. It's a difficult one, because that path, if you choose to take that, usually leads to struggles in the self, not so much between yourself and your subconscious self or your personality. And it's more about what's going on internally rather than externally. It doesn't mean that you're going to have terrible crises hit you from outside. Most of the time, it leads to these internal crises on the inside, which I think is all about spiritual development anyway. Most people think, well, it's all about karma and whether this thing or that thing's going to happen. And actually, I don't buy that. I think that karma does have an effect on us, but once you get into the spiritual development, and especially after the first couple of years of it, it's mostly about you overcoming your own fetters, your own problems, and dealing with them.
Right. You haven't mentioned the emotional body. What about
I can mention it. Yeah, the astral body, which each of these bodies has an emphasis on a manner of thought and a way of sense. Let's talk about the astral senses. The astral senses pick up feelings, you know that song, and it picks up feelings of everything and everyone around us, which is a good thing. I mean, you know, knowing how others feel and knowing how God feels is a really wonderful thing, if we can know all that. And then, in addition, it not only works on the sense of feelings, but it also helps us to create thought that is called imaginative thought or creative imaginative thought. So that's the kind of thinking that is done. What is that? That's like when you have pictures in your mind about something. And you can picture this and you can picture that, and you can even picture from one thing to the next to the next. That's how the astral body thinks. The mental body thinks logically. It uses concepts and then thoughts or thought forms that are examples of the concepts. Very different kind of thought between the two bodies. And the etheric physical body, the one that we sense the most from, has a very basic, we'll call it, kind of sense. It senses the difference between, we'll say, forceful sense and non-forceful sense, and it also senses whether we are cooperating and sharing and being efficient or intelligent in use of our energy, and whether others are doing the same with us. So it's a wonderful thing for that respect, but it's very limited in its ability to sense compared to the astral body, which has feelings added to that notion. And then the mental body also senses other people's thought. I didn't mention that. I told you how it thinks, but it senses other people's thoughts. And so other people's thoughts.
It's the intuitive self.
Well, and then the intuitive, intuitive is even beyond that. Now, the intuition gives us the ability to sense beauty and sense the balance between spirit and energy in ourselves and others. The balance being more like the balance of God itself. And so it's a really, once you get into Buddhic thought or intuitional thought, you're, same word by the same thing, I mean the same thing. Once you're into that kind of thinking and that kind of sensing, you're able to sense whether there is a real, we'll say, godly balance between spirit and energy and anything around you. And you can create things that are beautiful. Beauty is a wonderful thing because it instantly enlightens or helps to enlighten the senses of others. So as soon as we're able to create beauty in our thought, then the actions we take and the things we produce from those actions, it could be anything from a picture to writing something, or it doesn't really matter, becomes able to help to enlighten the senses of those that experience it. Isn't that a wonderful thing? That's what I really like about intuitional, is it can create this beautiful thing, which is neat.
Okay.
In the mental body, we create truth, but in the intuitional body, we create beauty, and the two can be completely compatible. That's the wonderful thing about them.
Let's move past the rays, because you know we just don't want to give the people everything. We want them to buy the book, don't we?
Well, the book is a lot more than the rays, but the rays are certainly part of it, and they're very difficult to understand. So, for those of you out there that I have confused, well, you know, you can also listen to my show. I'll talk about a lot of other things. And you can buy this book, or you can buy one of my other books, or you can, you know, whatever. But the point is that the rays are interesting, but difficult. Switch subjects, and we'll go to something easier. And maybe someone out there will say, oh, so that's what he's talking about. Go ahead.
All right. Let's go to the questions. I thought this list of questions was absolutely fabulous.
Okay.
Where did everything come from?
Oh, you talk about question number one, I think.
Question number one. Where did everything come from?
You want to pick the most difficult one. Well, okay. It's not difficult for me, but it may be difficult for our listeners to understand. I'll try to explain it in this way.
Okay.
In the ultimate beginning of what we would call the creator of our universe, it was self-created by being part of what is known as an infinite number of possibilities. Within everything, there is this infinite level of possibilities that exists around it. Now, you might say, well, okay, does that mean like parallel universes? And I mean, is there infinite? It's sort of, but it is a little different from that theory, because you can think of it this way. Let's say that we are a member of a field that is an infinite field of possibilities, and within that field, we create ourselves. We're capable of creating ourselves. Any being that can create itself from an infinite level of possibilities instantly becomes a being able or capable of creating a universe such as ours or greater than ours. Now, why is that the case? Because it is able to create itself out of a field of such vastness as being the most vast field of all fields that it could ever exist within. Out of the greatest of all fields, an infinite field, it can actually produce some degree of limitation within that infinite field and produce its own limited field of saying, hey, I am me, here I am. And it does this by its own thought. It says, hey, I can think within this field, even though it's huge. And I can think that I am me. And then it says, but you know what? I not only want to be a director of a little bit of this field, but I would like to create something new. I want to be something more. I want to be something interesting and different. I want to be a creator besides just part of this field of infinite possibilities. And as soon as it does that, then it says, you know what? As soon as I thought that, instantly I became a new universe. And the universe is not just the physical part of it that we all may read about or hear about from physics, but it goes way beyond that to other dimensions of time and space. But it's inclusive within the physical universe as well. And so this is where God made itself. And the God of our universe said, I would like to grow. I would like to be greater than who I am. And I don't know exactly what that all means, because if I did, it would be a boring journey for me, because I want this to be something that is creative, but not just me creating, because just me is kind of like just still some of the same old, same old. And I want it to be real growth, and real growth can only come through something that has freedom. So this God says, I got to have freedom in thinking beyond just my thought, and I've got to have something that grows itself while it grows me, if it chooses to grow me, and it has a choice not to do that. And so what God said, or the creator of our universe said, is, I'm going to create something that does all that. And what it created was life. Yep, life. It has a lot of conditions that it decided to put into how life will be made, and etc. But besides those conditions, life is free to think. And that's a very important thing to understand. So the very first part of this being's own, this God, this creator's own thought is, everything's going to have some level, various levels, based upon its ability to do so, to think. And it, if it chooses to, it can eventually think more in the direction that the creator itself thinks, like it's good to help to grow life. And so that's where everything came from. It came from a creator who self-created and then allows all life to create some part of itself as much as it's capable of. Now, if you don't think that that's a wonderful idea, come up with a better one, because I have never heard of a better one. And this system is not mine. I'm not going to take credit for it. I've only deciphered it, you might say. It's actually part of a whole system of we'll call it metaphysics, that's related collectively to a thing called ageless wisdom. It really doesn't mean that it's a religion or it's a specific philosophy, but it has a general conceptual understanding to it, which is kind of neat. And it does explain how something comes from nothing and how something can be self-created, and it explains where life comes from and why life, more importantly, exists, and how life can make or create more meaning for itself, which is a wonderful thing. It explains all that and a lot more, and that's what I like about it. And there's really nothing I've ever found that I don't like about it. But again, it's more of a cosmology and a philosophy than one would call it a religion, because religions are about ways specifically of worshiping God, worshiping the spirit within, and being maybe in communication with that spirit and God, whereas this whole cosmology, ontology, those are big words, that is ageless wisdom, really explains how it works and why it works, but it doesn't tell you that you've got to do this or got to do that in order to communicate with this, because that would be a religion then, and it's not that. I don't know. Does that answer question one? Maybe. Hopefully.
I think you did a pretty good job.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
If God limits itself, and I want to know what you mean by limits itself, to create
sacrifice.
A diverse universe, which includes people, then does
right.
God no longer exist?
Absolutely, God exists. This is the most fascinating thing, because this is really where some aspects of Buddhism went in two different directions, in other religions too. God still exists, in my opinion. Certain Buddhists would disagree with me. and actually I've had some of them on my show, some very famous ones, who really don't completely agree with what I'm going to tell you, so I have to have that caveat in there because I don't want people to think that I'm speaking for others. This is my thought. But if we look at this from the perspective of God, and I know that's a little hard to do, in order for there to be freedom for life in general, and various levels of life, especially human life and beyond, to have the ability to make choices and be creative in those choices, God has to limit its own thinking to some extent, but not to destroy itself. It doesn't want to destroy itself. It wants to actually participate in and enjoy its own creations, but not interfere. And so it's able to do this by a unique thing, and that's how the first three rays are developed, by separating its mind in two different directions or two different ways, the first part and the second part. And the third part of its mind is actually activity, because our whole universe is called an activity or action universe. And so it separates these three elements of itself in an equal way, so to speak, and it allows the rest of its growth to be dependent upon whether or not the life that is created in this tremendous volume that it produces of freedom, of spirit, which is the thought resembling God, to join with energy, creating bodies and senses and life forms and on, to, through either evolution or spiritual development or both, to create itself into new and varied and diverse elements of the thought in the action of God. It means that God still is interactive, especially when any part of this life chooses to co-create with God. So God gets like a tickle, and it says, whoa, there's someone co-creating, that's a nice thing. And it also gets a little bit of a boot, because there's parts of, especially humans, but there's other parts of life, too, that choose not to really follow the spiritual path and the spiritual part of thinking and goes against it and says, ah, bah humbug, I don't believe in God, I don't believe in spirit, and maybe even there's parts that are really antithetical to the existence of life, such as evil. And so God permits all this to happen, and so there's some parts that are good and some parts that aren't good, good meaning God. And so, but God allows this because ultimately, if you don't allow some of that negative stuff to be able to be developed, then the interference of it would prevent the other side, the growth side, from also being able to develop itself in full freedom. And so God says, well, sacrifice some of my ability to control, so that ultimately I increase the ability to grow. And that's what God does. But God still exists, in my opinion, throughout the universe and is present in many different ways, especially when goodness is being created.
Okay. All right. What do you mean by light? Is this the light that shines from the sun or other luminous sources?
Light. Well, anything that is in the development of more spiritual thought or more of God's thought is somewhat producing some level of light. Light brings time and space together and reduces forces and makes it effortless to be more one with our Creator and with all of life. That's what light does. Light is the thing that allows us to experience and sense without effort that, with great accuracy and intelligence, that which is around us. And in a physical sense, you can certainly see that's true for vision and other ways of sensing using light for human beings. We use many different forms of light these days. All those ways allow us to experience more and more accurately and intelligently our surrounding universe, be it the light of X-rays or the light of infrared or the light of ultraviolet, and it's all kinds of lights. But all that light together produces that. And if you have a lack of light, such as a very dark, selfish person might have, what happens is you have great inaccuracy in sense, terribly unintelligent activity that is very forceful and very destructive, and a distancing between other life and yourself and other life, I should say itself, I'm not specifically talking about anybody who's listening, other life and itself and other life and God and them itself and God. So everything gets separated when there's a lack of light, and everything gets put together as like oneness when there is light available.
When you say God's thought is energized, what do you mean?
Well, if you energize God's thought, then what happens is some of the spiritual part is joining with some of the activity part, and when it's not fully intelligent, activity becomes energy. So everything that we see as energy is the result of there being less than full development of our universe. And, of course, this part of the universe is under tremendously slow but consistently increasing development, and at the present time, it's developing in a relatively negative way, so there is more and more energy being produced and less spiritual development on an average at the present time in our universe, which is causing our universe to appear to be growing in size at a faster and faster rate because there's more and more energy available. But the energy is something called dark energy, which may not really be what people think it is. But in any rate, that's what's causing that effect, and it will reverse itself as more and more parts of life create more enlightenment in themselves and in others, and so this effect will eventually go away. It may take a billion or a couple billion years before we'll see that result, and we'll be around. Life never stops, and we'll be maybe very advanced beings outside of the human kingdom by that point, but it should be interesting to see how the universe eventually takes on a different shape.
Well, let's talk about the dark for a moment.
Sure.
What do you mean when you say it isn't what people are thinking? And listen, just want to let you guys know, I know we went through our break, but there's so much here to talk about that I thought, okay, we'll take a break at 9 o'clock. So sit tight. Okay, Niles, the dark. Most of us think of the dark as the evil side, demons, the fallen angels, you know, even what's going on with our government today. We're ruled by the dark side. What do you mean by the dark?
I think it's everything you just said and a lot more. If we really want to understand evil, and we need to understand that evil is only prevalent in its original state, in its creative state, in human beings. Human beings could contaminate animals and even plants and create evil things in them, and human beings can even negatively affect the spiritual kingdom beyond humans in some negative ways. But human beings are the actual focal point of what evil is. Evil is a choice to not identify with and co-create with one's creator. It's a choice to sometimes nullify the growth of that creator, which is life itself. So evil is anti-life and anti-growth of its creator for the sake of growing, in a very small sense, the lower self and personality of people. They become attached to the idea that it's more important for whatever they see of themselves to be the most important thing in the universe than for this creator or anything associated with it to be so. And they seek, instead of consciousness, which is like love, and unity and inclusiveness, they seek separation and power. Power leads to control and the desire to, we'll say, dominate other life, and eventually, in many cases, destroy other life for the sake of expanding the power within one's control sphere. And so evil is this obsession with this kind of condition. It usually is produced, if you look at it from a psychological state of mind, which is my past, you know, I that's what I did when a long time ago. And so looking at it from a psychological state of mind, what's really going on in people who are doing this is a tremendous level of hidden fear and a desire to overcome both fear of death, which is, of course, nonsense, but the people fear it, and also a desire and fear of loss of, we'll say, the ability to hold on to oneself. And so evil people have this kind of very strange paranoid perplexity in themselves that they are constantly looking for ways to control others, control everything, because they think that the end of that process is going to lead to their self being aggrandized and made special, and that they're going to have the ability to get whatever they want at no cost to them, and they don't care what it costs anything or anyone else. And they will also, in the process, experience immortality and infinite pleasures with disregard for any consequences, because they don't believe that they're responsible for or can be held responsible for anything. It's a weird kind of thought because it is totally wrong. In other words, no part of it is supported by the principles of the universe. And ultimately, someone who gets into that has got to lose down the line. And they do. But in an interim period of time, someone can delude themselves into thinking that they're actually achieving all the stuff that they want. And they may have temporary, you know, like for relatively short periods of time, success with this sort of behavior and thought. But in the long run, it is very, very destructive to the evil person besides to others. It hurt the growth of life to some extent, but it ultimately hurts the person who chooses it as a path.
As I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking to myself, and because we are magnetic, the feminine side of us is magnetic. It draws to us, you know, like attracts like. So when you're hanging out in life and you are living in this darkness, little air quotes here, that you're talking about, you are constantly drawing more like darkness to you. So it would hurt the person.
Yes. Yeah, and it does. It hurts the person choosing darkness. And to me, I have two different categories. Those who choose darkness are not necessarily objectively evil, but they... Evil is like the ultimate end of the process. Not everyone who chooses a dark path ends up being totally connected to evil, because to me, an evil person has given up their individual soul for a, believe it or not, an animal-like group soul that we call cosmic evil. But that's a very technical difference, and for a lot of people, someone who's really dark could be lumped together maybe with all the evil ones and it wouldn't bother them at all. With me, I like these definitive differences so that it does make a difference, because the evil people have very little chance of recovering from their state, whereas someone who's in a dark state probably has a good chance of recovering if they do something about it before they do turn completely evil. So that's the good news about that. So consequently, I don't think there's as many evil people out there. Yeah, go on. What do you say? Go ahead.
Well, if light is God's thought contained in form,
yes,
then what is thought?
Thought is a series of choices. The best way to understand it is this way. A series of choices that share a common direction to them. In other words, the choices are moving in the time and space that they exist in, share a common direction and has an effect on other choices that could or would be made within the same field that they exist in. So if it doesn't have any effect on other choices, it's not thought. And if it doesn't have a common direction, it's not thought. It only has choices. Choices in themselves are not thought. They have to have the other two things conditionally in them. And then if the thought follows the direction generally of the creator of the field, then it's more spiritual thought. But that's another thing.
I want to skip around here a little bit now because there are some other questions that I know drive people crazy, if you will. Death. Death is one of them.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Can you explain exactly what death is? I mean, what's it like? People are, you talk about it, you write a chapter about this. People are very afraid to die, and even when they say they're not, the way they cope with it is that they think it's something that's very far away. And, you know, I taught my class this, my Prosperity Abundance class, and it was one of the ways that I could put death in a space where I could deal with it and understand it. But I said, we die every minute. You've already experienced death. Yesterday is dead and gone. An hour ago is dead and gone. That time will never exist again.
Yeah, but
what
I do
say
that
death is.
Yeah, I think death is the fear of the future rather than the memory of the past. But at any rate, the best way to understand it is this: that first of all, human beings, actually, no life ever really experiences what most people consider to be death. Now, I want to say this in a caveat, and that is what I'm saying is from direct experience. It is not from books I've read or all my thing at the time when I was in practice or any of that kind of stuff. This is from direct experience. I've had too many to count out-of-body experiences because in the beginning of my out-of-body experiences, I had the crutch of using for a couple of years a sensory isolation tank, and then after that I learned how to do this through meditative methods. So I've gone there, been there, to the places where people go when they quote-unquote die from this dimension of time and space and use a different body and senses to focus their life through, which is the astral body. So all death is changing the focus of consciousness from one body and senses to another, and also, in some cases, leaving that body completely that a person dies from because it's worn out, either through disease or through injury or whatever, and going on to the next body. Now, there's a reason for this. I mean, it isn't just random that we're just moving from one dimension to another and what the heck. No, it's because it helps to reconnect us to our souls. We came to the physical world, which is the most difficult one to live in first, and the shortest of life. We were only going to live here 70 to 100 years for most people, and you know it's not that long because there's a thing called time dilation. When you go on to live in the astral dimension because the alpha constant and other physics changes, ultimately you live hundreds of years there. It's not the same number of years counted here, but to a person living there, they're experiencing time dilated, so they're living in a higher frequency, and so they have enjoy a lot more time. And so the good news is, in the next realm, we're going to be living in a body that is more responsive to spiritual thought, it's easier for us to sense, and it's easier for us to create activity. All those things makes life much more interesting and easier, but at the same time, we lose the opportunity to create more of our creator in the most difficult place, which is right here, right now. So don't just give up the ship and say, gee, this guy says it's better to be dead than alive. Why not I just kill myself now and go over there? Because this is the place right now to create God where it is most difficult. People that go over to the other side, gee, I wish I had known what I know now and then because I would have lived my life differently. So I try to get people to do that. Now, what did I discover? I discovered I was sort of the studs turkle. I was the guy, that's the guy who went out and asked people, what is it like? Well, that's what I did. Every time I would go over to the other side, besides performing various experiments and trying to figure out physics of the place, and you go on and on with it. But the point is, I asked everybody that I met, well, what's it like here? Yeah, the thing that dumbfounded me is some people didn't really know where the heck they were, which is okay, because I guess we don't know where the heck we are when we're here either. But nonetheless, that was a little surprising to me to know how much people didn't understand the nature of the time and space dimension they were in. But regardless, I got a great deal of understanding of what was going on in people, and I saw the changes that people had in consciousness from what they described of themselves being like while they were physically alive. And that was amazing. That was just amazing. I had a great great. I had thousands, literally, of pages of notes, and in fact, I was really tape recording it. But of when I would come back from these experiences, go back over them, see the commonality, try to figure out what it was about. This went on for years. I mean, it actually went on for more than a decade, because I was somewhat of a chicken to change myself, and that was the big ticket. I had to change me in order to understand the experiences I was having. And I didn't realize that until a few years into doing it, and I said, oh, so that's why I'm really not putting two and two together. It's about me. My own senses, my own consciousness hasn't grown to the point where these experiences are really coming together. As I started to change me, suddenly I discovered, hey, this is about God. This is about something bigger, because I was an atheist. I wasn't even an agnostic. I started in this thing saying, oh, when you're dead, you're dead. There's no God. There's no nothing. And then I get over to these other dimensions, and I started to say, no, wait a second. There is a God, because all this makes sense. This is designed for a purpose. Part of the purpose is the experience of redeveloping ourselves back to our soul. When we leave the soul consciousness, we become separate beings. Being a separate being is fine, because you've got to be independent and creative. See, the soul is doing the same thing with us that God did with the soul. It's the same kind of, you know, as above, then below kind of thing. And so that's a wonderful thing. But the point is, if we want to rejoin with our soul, we don't want to just remain in that limited consciousness we call human. We want to get back to the soul consciousness, and the only way we can do that is to grow it in ourselves. It isn't bestowed back upon us, because we've done some terrible things, we've done negative things, while being in a human consciousness, and to grow ourselves back into the soul consciousness takes a long time, and really a redevelopment of ourselves by shedding bodies and senses that produce illusion. So eventually, by giving up, sacrificing the spirit-energy connection, we become more and more spiritual, and eventually we just create ourselves back into being the soul, and we say, yeah, I really never left, although part of me did and did this stuff, and now I'm fully back to being who I really am. In case what we choose to do again, well, I'm going back to the lower dimensions of time and space and try it again with a different personality. Why a different one? Well, the first one or the last one made some mistakes, and it's all about others. And I think I can interact with many other souls' personalities in a better way by being more creative this way or that. It's a fascinating and very, very complicated process, but the wonderful thing about it is that it means that we never die. We only awaken to a greater and greater state of who we really are, which is a soul. At the present time, we're in a limited illusion state of being human. That's it. That's the facts. You may not believe it, but believe me, you're going to know what I'm saying is true, because some of you out there, within a shorter than longer time and some longer than shorter, but all of you are going to experience what I just said. So I know that you're going to eventually say, oh, I remember when that guy was on a show, and he was telling us that this is the way it is, and sure enough, this is the way it is. That's why I don't have to say, you don't have to believe me. You're going to have to experience it, and I know that then you'll see that what I'm telling you is the truth.
Why does the fear of dying prevent us from giving? What do you mean by that?
The personality is so much controlled by its own energy that it loses sight of the thought of God within itself. And the soul knows that this is going to happen. That's why the soul doesn't just jump into the whole thing and say, instead of creating a little clone of myself, I'll call a human and send it down there and let it suffer. It doesn't jump in and do it itself, because any time you clothe yourself in the energy of this world, you get so much illusion that the personality becomes convinced it is completely separate from everyone and everything else. Once it is convinced of this separation, it then becomes afraid of what the separation means. That it is not part of its soul. It's not immortal. It's not anything. And it becomes just scared. And in this fear state, it becomes over-controlling, becomes self-destructive, and it over-controls its own self, its own conscious part. So this is the struggle in us, is to become fully conscious and to take this subconscious part I call the personality and to expand it into a fully conscious being who is fully loving, because consciousness and lovingness are the same thing. It's the ability to see that we're all part of life and we're all part of a great being that created this life. And once you connect with that, you're no longer afraid, and you're no longer living in this constant terror that you're going to cease to exist when you die. And the personality, unfortunately, without becoming fully conscious and by being mostly subconscious to its own self, lives in that terror most of the time. It's too bad, but it's something we have to struggle with. The way to overcome it is by becoming more loving. As you become more loving, it's the cure for the problem.
You say that when we pass from this body, we go to the etheric plane, and we live there for what would be thought of as about 35 years in Earth years.
In the etheric plane,
where do we go after that?
Let me correct that. No, in the etheric plane, we live about a month or two. We go to the astral world, which probably averages about 35 years of physical world time. Yeah,
so the etheric plane
is a very short time. Most people live there for actually a couple of weeks, maybe on average, and it's usually because they just want to see what's going to happen. They don't have complete closure of their life. They want to see what's going to happen now that they're considered dead. And it's weird to them because they're not really dead, but they can't, for the most part, communicate with the people who are alive. Some children might be able to see them. Some people with etheric sight and sense might be able to see them. But that's a rarity. Generally, they're completely isolated, even though they can hear to some extent and see the surroundings. And they can visit their own funeral. They can get to see what happens in the relatives fight over who gets the chair and the diamonds and the this and that. You know, they get to see that stuff played out. But unfortunately, they don't get to interact with it. But it does give them closure about their life. Some people say, I don't need that stuff. Who cares? I'm dead? Fine. Everybody thinks I'm dead. I want to know what's coming. And then they instantly travel to the astral dimension, and they spend minutes or even seconds in the etheric part of this dimension. The etheric is the electromagnetic part of the physical world. And so they may only spend a very short time and just go right to the astral world. And then some people spend a lot of time there. And it's just a matter of differences. I know you're coming up on your break.
I am, and we need to take it this time. So
all right.
Let's do that, guys and dolls. And I want to remind you that we are helped in our sponsoring by Fate Magazine. Go to fatemag.com. Tell Phyllis, hey, heard about you on bbsradio.com. Tell her, sure would like to have a free T-shirt or subscribe to the magazine. But it's a fabulous, the oldest paranormal magazine out there. Used to be owned by Llewellyn, and now it's owned by Galdi Press. Phyllis is a wonderful woman. We love her to death, or to life. We love her to life. Let's take a break. Please stay with us, folks. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. So you sit tight, and don't forget that Monica is coming on at 9:30. And sit right there, because Niles has a whole lot more to say. So listen to some scalar music. We'll be right back.
yourself. Fill yourself up with a healing green light. Especially feel your heart respond to your emotions being healed if you love yourself. The green represents life. Feel yourself being aligned with life's principles. Aligned with nature, Mother Earth. You can feel the joy of living. You breathe that breath of life, the green light. The green represents abundance. That appreciation of the abundance.
Joining us, staying with us at Reign of Truth Talk Radio. Talk Truth Radio, that used to be the name of my old show, Reign of Truth Talk Radio, and I just went into that so easy, didn't I, guys, dolls, boys, girls? Okay, Talk Truth Radio, that's the name of our show, brought to you by Dr. Sandra Rose Michael and the EE System Energy Enhancement System, the Scalar Energy. We're brought to you by Fate Magazine, and we're contributed to also by advertisement through Utati Essential Oil. Utati is the finest seventh generation Egyptian medicinal oil makers, the finest essential oil in the world, and you can go to UtatiEssentialOil.com and check them out. Our guest this evening is Niles McFlower and his book, Life's Hidden Meaning. Niles, this is just really good stuff, and I really had a good time doing this show. I'm sorry that you only have another half an hour, but you're coming back on because we have but touched the tip of the iceberg.
That's very nice.
I want to go just a little bit more on death, and then I want to go to a subject that I know is important to a lot of people, and that's animals. But let's just touch death a little bit more. When a person dies, what about their memory, their knowing who they are? Do they go back to just being a soul?
Well, first of all, let's talk about memory. We have the worst memory while we're here, and that's because of the level of splitting of our senses, which creates tremendous illusion in both our perception and in our thought processes. So our memory is almost non-existent of having been a soul or any of our prior lives, unless we were very virtuous in those prior lives. Then we do retain the memory. That's why people like the Dalai Lama or someone like that has a very good memory of quite a few lifetimes. But for most of us, we're turkeys. You know, we're so selfish in our physical lifetimes, it's hard for us to remember much about them. Some of us may remember occasionally some memory actually of an astral or a part of our mental lifetimes before we went back to being a soul in a prior lifetime. But even that's difficult to remember. It's very tough for the physical brain also to remember things that happened to us while we were in astral or mental plane life in a prior lifetime. That's a little complicated to explain why, but it has to do with energy fields called webs between the physical brain and the other brains that block us from really understanding what happened before. But at any rate, I think the most important point to your question is this. As we die from each body, our memory improves. It doesn't get worse, and we actually can remember much better how we lived in our last astral life while we're astrally alive in our next version of life in the astral dimension. So we remember a lot more of being living in prior lives from the lifetime we're in our physical body. And so just shedding the body, just getting rid of it, it improves our memory of our prior lifetime while astrally alive in the last lifetime, and also gives us a better understanding. I think memory without understanding isn't really very helpful anyway. So we get better understanding or consciousness of what it all meant to be alive and the things, the mistakes we made, and the things we would like to change in this lifetime. Every lifetime has the opportunity to improve the person. So that's really the good news about it. And that's one of the things that convinced me that there was a God, is that I could see, it was obvious, going to the astral world at least, that there was a purpose to this whole thing. It wasn't just some kind of random nonsense, which is what I thought the universe was like before that. And it made sense. And I said, oh, well, this makes sense. This has a reason behind it.
Is there a God, a being that's watching over us?
Absolutely. There not only is a God, there are many beings that some of them never have or will be human. We call that the energy side or angelic side of existence. Those beings, some of them, are helpful towards us. There's also superhuman beings, who some people call masters or whatever. I don't know, you know, whatever word we put on it would never really fully describe that existence
right.
Until we get there. But the point is that they are helpful. Everything that is beyond human in spiritual development is attempting to improve humanity. And then, this is another interesting thing. There are many planets, I say this with some degree of, we'll say, sorrow. There are many planets far more advanced than this one that humans exist on. So, and those humans have some degree of concern about what they know of this planet. And then they have great concern for the fact that we are screwing up pretty badly. But we're in a great experiment here. This is one of the most difficult planets for our soul to have decided to come to try to incarnate on. And the purpose, again, is to overcome some of the worst things that can happen on planets, including evil. So we're here to kind of do battle. Not all of us are going to stay. A few of us will probably say, you know what, I've had enough of Earth. I think I'm going to one of those better places. See ya.
Going to be my next question, Niles. If one gets to the other side, not if, when one gets to the other side, what if we say, I have had enough. I'm done with this. I want off of the wheel, off of the karmic wheel. And I still want to continue to be human, but I'd like to go live on one of these parallel universes, whatever we call it. What do you call it?
Well, you go to live on another planet and usually a different solar system. But the point is, yeah, you can leave this solar system and everybody has that option. It's amazing that everyone has an option, unless you're evil. Weird, if you choose a life of evil, then you get stuck on Earth no matter what. But the interesting thing is that the people who aren't evil, the souls that aren't evil, they can choose to leave. But most of us will not take that choice, because once we get to the level of being our soul again, the soul has already been there all the time. We're just kind of rejoining ourselves. And we actually say, well, you know, it didn't go as well as I would like. The world needs a lot more help. And I have the best abilities to do this because I've already done it hundreds of times, and so I'm going to go back. And it seems almost unbelievable that such a vast number of us choose to keep doing this. But it's because we recognize how important a role we're playing on such a difficult place, because Earth is really challenged. It's a third-ray planet, which means it's the most difficult of all the types of planets to really develop human life on. And it is a planet in which militarism and death and destruction is really like the hallmark in its beginning human development. And we're supposed to try to change this from a history. I mean, anybody who watches the History Channel or a similar one, it's all about murders and killing and wars, and yeah. I mean, our whole history is like that. But it's supposed to change if we can overcome the kinds of evil that have produced this effect. And those kinds of evil are, for most of the universe, something that it will be faced with in the future. So like it's like we're taking on something that is millions of years of time in the future might be affecting other worlds. To see if we can beat it here, it's like a big laboratory, then we'll come up with new great ways to improve the whole universe. And that's the reason our souls are so fascinated by this. Not because we want to suffer, but because we want to prevent the suffering of many countless planets with this other kind of evil that we're dealing with in this particular world at this time. There's other reasons for this planet's development, but that's a big reason in itself.
I don't know if you've written anything about this, but when we get to the other side and we say, okay, I don't want to come back in a human body. I want to stay on that side. I want to guide from the other side. Like, I'm a medium, and people come to me on a regular basis to talk to spirits that have departed. And I
sure.
seem to have an innate ability to tap in and oftentimes even be able to tell that person names, what somebody looks like. I had a client that came to me, and her father had passed away, and I said, I'm getting a picture of a pirate. I see a buccaneer. Why am I seeing a pirate? And she started to cry, and she said, because that's what he dressed up as last Halloween, and he was with my daughter at that time, and that's how we think of him as a pirate. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I should send you another copy of a different book than the one I gave you, because in that you can read about experiences that I've had, as well as other characters are real people in this book. I wrote ostensibly a novel about real people who had real experiences. What a cheat, huh? And then I added just a few fantasy things in there. Most of it's just their own story. But regardless, I still call it a novel. And in there, I actually have been on the other side while a number of mediums have been in contact with people from the other side and watched it happen. I was more or less on the sidelines watching rather than participating, but I watched others participate in this, and it's fascinating from the perspective of the other side, because from the other side, what they're doing over there is really difficult stuff because of the time, space, physics problems, and they have to overcome this, and they can't do it as easily as one might expect. Actually, all the problem stuff is done from their side. But what the medium is doing here with their psychic abilities is important, but without what's being done on the other side, it would be almost impossible to happen. And so it's amazing, and a lot of it's done these days in a collective fashion where there's numerous people involved in it rather than just done one-on-one. Now, some people still are involved in one-on-one situations. That's a little different. Sometimes that's when you get into the channeling issues and things. Because in those cases, there's actually direct contact between the senses. I'm not so sure it's a good thing. I'm just reporting it, the senses of one person from the other side are connecting to the senses of the person on this side, and you can almost say it's like a possession, but it's, you know, they call it channeling. And the goodness of that can be that you get direct, subdirect information from one particular individual, but the bad part about it is sometimes it can be abused, and oftentimes there's a lot of ego things involved in it. Regardless, there are such complicated things that are done, and it's so amazing that I think that that in itself is a fascinating subject, but I don't want to spend the last few minutes just talking about that one thing. So go on.
I know, and I need to ask this question, too. For those of us that live our whole life endeavoring to expand our consciousness, to grow spiritually in every direction of time and space, do we get to have easier passings? I mean, I envision myself, if I don't get to ascend in this lifetime, and remembering that, you know, the all of the great histories talk about in the end, and Jesus said this in the Bible, and, you know, for what's left of the Bible, and in the end, even shall death be overcome. But if I don't achieve that in this lifetime, and it's really hard for me to think I'm not going to, but if I don't, my idea of passing is just to simply sit down, say goodbye to everybody, and sit down in my big chair and go to sleep. Now, you know, the difficult deaths, the wasting diseases, the cancers, the HIVs, can we evolve to a place where we simply stop that? We leave that behind?
Yes, the answer to it is relatively simple. Actually, the Tibetans have been teaching this for about 600 years. I think the important thing to the important part, Tibetan Buddhists have been teaching this for about 600 years. The important part of this is to realize that most of the time when someone is seriously ill, they become unfortunately very self-focused. The answer to your question is to be able to control consciousness to the point where you can direct your consciousness into the body that you're going to live the rest of your existence, or at least part of the rest of the existence in, and to leave the physical body and then choose not to return. All of that can be done through practice, and I can explain it maybe on another show. If any of your listeners are in a position, maybe in a hospice or whatever, where they need to understand this, they can call me and I'll explain it to them. But it does take some practice, and you need to have several months or longer of time to even get close to being able to do it. And your focus cannot be about yourself in the process. It can't be because you're afraid of dying or afraid of even suffering. You really have to be focused mostly on the last part of your life, on doing the most amount in creating light in yourself and others, and learn a little bit of certain techniques which can be taught of how to deal with certain chakras, etc. Now, I think you do have a copy of the book Afterlife Love. In that, which is what I was talking about earlier, in that there is some description of one of the characters who actually goes through exactly what you're asking for. And actually in the book, I'm giving away too much, I guess, about the book, but in the book, this character actually does do that, actually leaves full, in that, you said asleep, just the opposite, leaves in full consciousness, says, okay, see ya, bye. That's it.
That's really what I want.
That's what you want.
The body went to sleep.
Yeah, the body. You could say the body goes to sleep, but you stay fully awake. And next thing you know, you're looking down at it from the electromagnetic or etheric body. You're floating around the room, and then you say, "Oh, wasn't that interesting? There I am down there." Now you can practice that, and I can explain to people with more time than what we have here how to do that. And then in a few months, most people can at least have an etheric out-of-body experience. And then if you want to control going to the astral world as well, that takes even more time, and most importantly, more not being focused on yourself. You really have to develop this ability to serve. If you do that, and you do it on a regular basis, there's nothing to it. It's almost it's almost remarkably simple, although there is some science to it, to be able to control one's own leaving of the physical body and physical dimension for the astral world. And it's, of course, you also realize, and I'm sure you're aware of this, if you're truly doing this as a final destination, you won't be able to come back because immediately you break something called the sutratma, and as soon as you break that, the connection with your heart center and your physical body is broken, and you won't be able to come back because then you truly are no longer in control of your physical body any longer. It's just a bunch of minerals and chemicals that are being controlled now by different things entirely. So you're gone. And you'll stay then and live the rest of, well, not the rest of your life, but a large portion for the near future will be lived in one of the subdimensions or more than one of the astral world, which is fine. And you can do this. You can do this completely by choice. Everybody has this option. It's all dependent upon how they live, and how you live is how you're going to die. If you want to learn a little bit more about this, you can read about it in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, although it's not completely accurate about what happens after you die, it does tell you how to get there. And it goes through the various chakras and tells you what you can do with them. It's a little bit overly religious in some respects, and it misses some of the science which is included in Life's Hidden Meaning. So possibly reading both of those might be of some help. And then if you really are in trouble or have a meeting with death coming sooner than later and you have some idea of when it is, give me a call. I mean, you know, I'm available. I don't charge anything, so it's not going to cost you anything. And I'll explain if you're in, you know, if you're looking at a future maybe of 3 to 6 months, we could discuss how to get better control over the process of dying and to eliminate most of the suffering at the same time. One of the things that can relieve suffering if a person is ill or has been hospitalized for some traumatic, serious injury, is I can teach people how to leave their physical body. As soon as you go in the etheric body and you're watching your physical body later, you lose all sense of pain. So the pain and the subsequent suffering stops, and you can do this for fairly long periods of time while you're in this convalescing or maybe dying state, depending on which is happening. And that also relieves some of the problems about the death process. You don't want to just say, well, I'm deciding to die at this moment, because ultimately your soul is the one going to make that decision. But interestingly, you can also connect with a part of your soul who will tell and inform you when you're really going to die. That's another thing that you can learn and you can use. There's actually a part of the soul that you can communicate with that will inform you of that.
We have so much more to talk about. I really wanted to touch on, you know, the souls of dogs and cats and your animals, you know, those beings that we love so much. But I think what's important that we end this with, because we've only got about 6 minutes. I want you to talk about virtue.
Yeah, virtue is the thought of our Creator when we do something and put it into action and it becomes part of the forms around us. It's a wonderful thing. It's like light that is right in the form itself. And it also makes forms more beautiful. So it automatically beautifies forms while it's creating something that is more like the way in balance and in activity that the Creator originally thought of our universe to be like. And so when we're here to do this. We're here to create virtuous activities and virtuous ways of those activities interacting with other people's activities so that ultimately the forms around us become more and more, we'll say, beautiful, as well as underneath that beauty, more truthful, more loving, and more cooperative and sharing. All these things come together when we create virtue. It's a wonderful thing. Human beings are here to do that.
How does one go about creating virtue?
What's that?
How does one go about creating virtue?
By changing the focus. In the beginning, by changing the focus from it being about us to being about creating more inclusively with all others. by seeing that all life has importance rather than just our own life. That doesn't exclude us. It just includes us with all others. And it doesn't mean that we lose our individuality. It actually grows in the process because we're part of the creation itself. So don't ever think that I'm saying, like some religions might say, that we should become, you know, like non-entities or non-individuals. I'm saying the opposite, that we actually become more individual, but we also become more inclusive. That's the beginning of the process. There are many more things to explain about than that, but that's just something to whet the appetite for those who are listening.
Yes, in the next show we'll talk more deeply about virtue. But what I think I hear you saying is when we put our focus on how we can be of service to the earth and my brothers and sisters, then I create virtue.
Yeah, and spiritual service is the ultimate goal of creating virtue. You start off with small things, and eventually you want to become a spiritual server. But spiritual service, as you're describing it, is like a whole life plan, you might say. It's more than just doing something at the moment. It's really like a more like a daily and even monthly, yearly kind of plan for existence.
Okay. We only have a couple of minutes, and our engineers, if they're listening, coming up on 9:30, and we need to get Monica on. Monica, you know, Niles, I hope you get to listen to the show after you hang up, and I hate to have you hang up, but she is really, really phenomenal. She's brilliant. So,
well, I will try and listen. I will try and listen.
Boy,
and I have to go
tuned
to another room to do that. But I will try to listen, and I really want to thank you and your listeners for this opportunity to share with them some of my thoughts. And I want to commend you for having a guest who, I don't know her, but from what you said, she's got a lot to share and to of interest and help in a special kind of astrology. And astrology is definitely part of the philosophies that I understand about. It has to do something with some ray energies, but I'm not going to get into that. And so that's wonderful that she's going to be on, and I hope to hear as much as I can of what she's going to say.
Yeah, she's really great. And Niles, I want to thank you so very much and end with this. Tell us about our animals and their souls and their incarnations.
Yeah, pets are really in the process of getting closer and closer to having an individual soul. But animals in general do not. They have a group soul, which does a lot of their thinking for them. It's called preconceived thought or instinctual thought. And so they have very complex patterns of behavior that are controlled by a self connected with the group soul. And so they act similar to other animals. When animals start acting unique, they usually have contact with human beings, and we call them pets, and they're on a different road of development. They're at the apex of being an animal, and eventually, before the rest of their, you know, the lower animals around them become human beings, which will be a long, long time in the future, our pets might actually become human beings in a shorter period of time, maybe even just centuries or even millennia at most away from that time. We can incarnate with the same pet over and over again, so it's possible to do that. People ask me that. And they definitely follow us into the astral world for sure.
Niles, thank you so much for contributing to our show. You really helped me do a good show tonight, and I just very, very much want to thank you. I'm going to be in touch with you in the next few days, and we'll get you booked on the show again, because believe it or not, as much as we covered tonight, it is but a drop in the bucket. The book
I know.
Niles has written is Life, Hidden Meaning. Niles, thank you so much for coming on.
And thanks for having me as a guest. What's that? Oh, I'm going to be on 7 o'clock on Friday. Yeah, 7 o'clock on Friday.
7 o'clock on Friday night. BBSRadio.com. Niles, thanks
where I'll
so
be.
Much.
Thank you.
Many blessings to you.
Same to you. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Right. Okay, people, we're going to go to break right now, and when we come back, I promised you Monica Lewis is coming on. We're going to be talking about Sabian symbolism in the astrological charts, and just let me remind you about our energy enhancement system, the Bioscalar technology by Dr. Sandra Rose Michael, and please go to the website and take a look at the medallion. It's just so very cool piece of art to wear on you that literally has the ability to increase the level of hydrogen atoms that hold DNA together and eliminate and nullify effects of disruptive frequencies, what we call ELF and EMF. Can contribute to a deep meditative relaxation and vision improvement and relief from pain and, oxygenates the blood and improves circulation. Listen, it does a ton of stuff. So even if you're depressed, it can help with that. It's an anti-aging tool. You need to go, please, to www.eesystem.com or call 877-777-9465. And remember, 777, the kicking off of the Freedom for Life insurance program. And when Dr. Sandra Rose comes on, we'll give you a little bit more information about all of that. But let's get quiet here now, and we will get Monica on the line. We'll take a little break. Sit tight. We'll be right back.
From Hawaii, DJ Scalar on E105.
Hey, and thanks for staying with us, and welcome back to Talk Truth Radio. As I promised, our last hour is going to be with someone that impressed me beyond belief. I've had many, many astrological readings throughout my lifetime, and not one ever taught me or gave me such insight into the workings of my own existence, my own life. And I just can't tell you how wonderful and how brilliant I believe Monica Lewis to be. I know Monica Lewis to be. Want to give you, before I bring Monica on, just want to give you the website for the Freedom of for Life that we've been talking about, IABFreedomForLife.com. The fan, and it's Mercury retrograde, that's what we're going to be talking about, the fan blew my paperwork all around when we took a break, and I was searching my desk to find the website. So, and want to give this to you again, IABFreedomForLife.com. Go and check out this completely alternative insurance plan. And if you have an interest to get on board with this, you will need to come in under ID number 87803, 87803, IABFreedomForLife.com. And the kickoff is July 7th. And it's in Dallas, so you can get lots more information from their website. And Dr. Sandra Rose Michael, do we have you on also?
Hey, aloha.
Hey, much aloha to you. Okay, so I'm really, really looking forward to this hour. So let us introduce Monica Lewis. Hi, Monica.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Sandra. Hi, Rain. It's good to be with you.
How are you, sweetie?
I'm doing well.
Honey, I have to tell you, that was the most phenomenal, enlightening reading session, whatever we want to call it, that I have ever experienced. And I want to start out, and I'm sure that Dr. Rose is going to have some questions for you, too. But I want to start out with two things. First, I would like to have you explain the Sabian symbols system of astrology to us, and then I would like to have you go into Mercury retrograde, because I know that many people out there think of it as almost the plague we happen, what is it, three times a year? It's
yes,
like the plague of the astrological system, and people go, oh, God, Mercury's going to go retro. Look out. So I want to hear what you have to say about that.
All right, but first I'll answer your question about the Sabian symbols and what they
yeah.
are. Yeah. The Sabian symbols, each, as you know, the zodiac has 360 degrees because it's spherical.
Yes.
And each of those 360 degrees has a huge multidimensional heliogram associated with it. And each, and that huge multidimensional heliogram is called a Sabian symbol. They were first brought through in 1925 in San Diego, California, by a medium named Elsie Wheeler with the help of Dr. Mark Edmund Jones. He simply took a postcard, blank postcard, and wrote something down like Aries 1, and then said, Elsie, what do you see? And she said, I see a seal and a woman coming out of the water, and the seal is embracing the woman as she comes out of the water. And then he'd go something like, Aries 2, what do you see? I see a clown laughing. You know, and they just wrote them down real fast
mm-hmm.
in this park. And then after he had them, he began to research them. And they're called the Sabian symbols because he believed, Mark Edmund Jones believed, that they came from the Sabians who were connected with the Great Pyramid and the knowledge of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And those people today are known, some of the Sabians are also known as the Mandaeans, which live in the marshlands of the Euphrates in Iraq. So that was Mark Edmund Jones called them that, and that's how he got them. And they'd been known for centuries, but they had been lost, and they were recalled clairvoyantly. And I use them in the chart. I do a regular chart reading like any other astrologer, but I use the Sabian symbols to enhance, give depth to the reading. Is that sufficient?
Okay. That's a good explanation. How about some reading material for those that would like to have a deeper understanding of this?
Well, the classic on the Sabian symbols is a book by Dane Rudyard called The Astrological Mandala, The Cycle of Transformations, and it's 360 symbolic phases. And that book was published in 1973, and it's a little red book about the size of a regular paperback, small paperback. And that's probably available. Excuse me?
It is still in print?
Yes, it is. It is in print.
Okay.
It could easily available.
Okay. All right. So Mercury's retrograde right now. Let's talk about that.
Okay, you're right. Most people consider Mercury retrograde to be the bane of existence.
Yeah.
Mercury goes retrograde, your phones don't work, your computers die, you know, all sorts of dire things get lost in the mail. People misunderstand each other, etc. So it's sort of the thing that everyone fears when it starts to come. And in general, it's Mercury's retrograde effect on machinery and things that go forward are just that. They do break down. You end up having your plane delayed and taking a scenic tour through a place you've never wanted to go or staying overnight.
Dr. Sandra Rose will tell us what her son went through.
Yes, that's classic. And most people just take it to be a very infuriating time. But there's a positive side to Mercury retrograde, and the positive side I'll get into here. What happens, and the reason it gets all screwy, is when Mercury goes retrograde, it's actually the time when Mercury turns within and goes into the soul depth. So it's what happens is that all living things on the planet, and I believe mechanical things as well, do a shift from left brain functioning to right brain functioning, meaning everything where you think of Mercury in terms of information, data, straight communication, that all goes away. And you shift from left brain function, which that is a part of, to right brain function, which is soul depth. So when Mercury is retrograde, you're really going within, and you're going on a soul journey, and Mercury's role changes from the information gatherer and the it's still the communicator, but now it's the guide of souls. In Greek, it's the psychopompos. And that's what it's working on. It's taking you within. So these scenic little journeys that you end up because of road detours or plane delays or some other mix-up that slows you down are meant to make you literally stop going forward in a left-brain manner, information-gathering manner, and make you just stop, stand still, and turn your soul within. So if you're being led around by Mercury retrograde, because it wants to pay, it's playing its role as soul guide and wants you to stop acting in a left brain manner and start acting in a right brain manner and follow the soul guide through this magical journey into your own depths of being. So the shift, very simply, is from outer focus to inner focus and from attention to awareness. So there's a massive shift into the right hemisphere of the brain, kind of an altered state. It's a great time for hypnotherapy and any kind of ruminations. It's a wonderful time for dreaming and for information to come back to you via dreams. Lost things will be found, other things will be lost. So it's actually a very positive period from the soul level. It's very infuriating on the straight information and workaday world level of schedules.
The world of the mundane. I had an experience this Mercury. I fried my laptop.
Typical outer experience.
What would you say about that? Why would I fry my laptop? What did I need to be aware of?
It wanted you to stop focusing outwardly, like onto the information that was on your laptop. It wanted you to stop and go inside and use your inner senses. So it took away the mechanism or the machinery that kept you outwardly focused. The purpose was to get you to go within.
Yes, well, and then I began to focus on how much money it was going to cost to replace it.
Exactly, and that was still ruminating on the outer. Now, when Mercury first turned retrograde, which it did on the evening of the 15th of June,
right.
There's a lot of resistance between about the 15th, 16th, and 17th to shifting your consciousness from left brain to right. It's kind of like crossing a barrier or changing gates or styles. So for that first 3 days when it turned retrograde, there's a lot of resistance, like, I don't want to deal with this, you know, I don't want to have to think about these things.
But Monica, we go into the shadow before Mercury actually went retro on the 15th. I fried my computer. I believe it started into its shadow time, or it's the beginning of going retro, at noon that Wednesday, and I fried my computer that night. I want to know about that. What does that mean, the shadow?
Which day was that? The shadow, well, it actually started on May 30th, because it entered Mercury would retrograde from 12 degrees Sabian, roughly rounding up to a whole number, 12 degrees Cancer, back to 3 degrees Cancer. So on May 30th, it entered 3 degrees Cancer. So it's been working, you know, going forward, but from May 30th until it turned retrograde, it was in the shadow right then. And what that means is that things that went on during the shadow period were sort of, it was a preview of the retrograde is what it was. Things that came up and became important during that time of the shadow were the things that were going to come back in bold print or at heavy-duty focus for the retrograde period. And so, again, what day did you fry your computer?
Well, let's see. It was 4 weeks ago today. Dr. Rose was here. It was funny. If it hadn't have been so earth-shattering, it would have been funny because I said a glass of water, and I didn't really mean to tell a fib. It was actually a glass of wine, red wine. We had had dinner earlier, and we both came back to the office with a little wine in our glasses, and, you know, we sat down to do the radio show, and I turned around to say something to Dr. Rose, and the back of my chair hit the wine glass, and it spilled it across my computer, which neither one of us was aware of. We were looking at the off-white carpet that I have with the red wine all over it, and Sandra Rose jumped up and ran and got a towel, and we were kind of mopping it up, and I was thinking to myself, oh, I have this spray. We'll take that stain out, no problem. So we get that cleaned up while we're doing radio, and as I got it all cleaned up and I looked up, the screen on my computer went black.
Well, that if you go exactly 4 weeks ago, that was the 30th.
Yes,
of May.
That was the day.
And that was the day it entered shadow.
Uh-huh.
Little premonition here.
Uh-huh.
Just giving you a little
surprise. And then, of course, you know, I always say that when Mercury is out, when it's complete, I know more. I am more. And it was interesting. I was in shock through the show. I was in shock. I mean, here is something that is absolutely imperative in my life. And Sandra really did a grand thing for me because she snapped me out of that shock. I was kind of moving into, oh, my God, you know, what am I going to do now? And she said to me, Rain, what do you want? And that snapped me out of that shock that I was in and didn't allow me to further sink into the problem of it. And I said, well, I want my computer fixed. And I didn't get my computer fixed, but I got a brand new one.
Yeah,
so when I come out of Mercury, I've learned things.
Yeah, that's one thing it will do. It will do something, you know, that you think is a catastrophe like that.
Uh-huh.
And then you got something better because I think, didn't you get an upgraded computer?
Well, I got a new MacBook. And, you know, I hadn't had Mac before. I was a PC person, and I had a very good computer. You know, my laptop would do more than I could ever do with it, and really hadn't planned on having a new computer. You know, I didn't think there was anything I would need that would be better than what I had. But, yeah, I ended up with, you know, the Mac Daddy, so to speak. Not only is it a Mac and, you know, will do all the graphics that I need once I learn to do that stuff, but it has the Intel chip inside, so it interfaces with the PC. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, I got a fabulous computer, but I didn't think I really needed that.
But now that you have it, what do you think of it?
It's awesome. And I just know that I have to learn to use it. It will force me to increase my computer skills.
Okay. What time about did you spill this wine? Was it in the evening?
Yes.
On the 30th? Do you have a rough
uh-huh.
time? I just want to see if it really wasn't shadow.
Did I have a rough time?
No.
Oh, do I have a rough time? Well, the show started at 7:30, and I'm going to say we were, you know, probably an hour into the show. So, you know, roughly 8:30 in the evening. Sandra, would you say I'm close?
Sandra?
Sandra Rose, are you there? Well, okay. So, but I know I am. It was roughly
okay.
8:30 because we had been in here for about an hour.
Yeah, I'm putting on about roughly 8:30. I'm just plugging it in on the 30th on that night, 8:30. For you, and yes, Mercury was in the third degree of Cancer. It was at 2:27, so it was in the third degree, the place where it will turn direct on July 9th. So
and Cancer being
shadow.
My moon.
Yeah. So you got a you got a taste of it. And
that was more than a taste, Monica.
Yeah.
I took a bath in that.
Well, it could have been worse.
And I just want to say this again, Monica, of all the readings that I have had, what you did for me, I probably, language being a barrier, can't really tell you, put it into words, but you really gave me a tool that enlightened me about my life. You know, what's really going on for the greater good and for the higher purpose and you know, beyond the mundane that we just live in. I have never had an experience like you gave me, and I just want to thank you.
Well,
I want to recommend you, anybody out there wanting to have this kind of session, please get a hold of Monica. Monica, give us your contact information, please.
Okay, my contact information
might like to have a reading
is...
from you.
Yeah, I have two emails, and my major email is the Sabian app webtv.net, and I'll spell that for you. It's T-H-E lowercase, then Sabian is capitalized, S-A-B-I-A-N, and then the app sign, webtv.net.
Okay.
Webtv.net.
You taught me some very interesting things, like Neptune, fantasy, Saturn, reality.
Yes.
I don't even really know where to take you in this talk this evening, but I think that, you know, connecting the Sabian symbols up to some of these planets might be a good way to go so that people really you know, get an idea of what the holographic symbols are about. So why don't we kind of talk about Neptune and Saturn and Pluto and Venus?
Well, that's really, let's talk about that Neptune-Saturn opposition. What we have going on tomorrow, at tomorrow the 28th, we'll have Mercury will make its conjunction, Mercury retrograde will make its conjunction to the Sun. But that's happening right between two major events. And the first one was the day I did the reading for you, Saturn and Neptune were in exact opposition for the third time, and they will not be in exact opposition again for 35 more years. But Saturn and Neptune have been in opposition for most of this year. Like what I did for you, taking a look at Saturn and Neptune on my screen, is Saturn was at 21 degrees, 46 minutes of Leo when it went, and opposite the Saturn was the Neptune at 21 degrees, 46 minutes of Aquarius. So you have an exact opposition. Now, the Sabian symbol for 20 is you have to round Sabian symbols up to whole numbers. So 2146 becomes 22. And 22, as you know from numerology, is a master number.
Yes.
And you know all the things that apply to 22 as a master number apply here. But to get to the Sabian symbol, 22 Sabian was where the Saturn was in Leo. 22 Leo, the Sabian symbol, is a dove lighting before its owners. It's the ideal of a world server, those who give out service to humanity, to the planet, who do the best, you know, who do good deeds for everyone and everything and want to leave good lives. Now, that's what that is. It's about an ideal of world service and the mastery of giving oneself in service. The 22 Aquarius opposite, 22 Neptune in Aquarius opposite is a small child playing on a rug, which doesn't sound like much, except a small child, again, reflects Leo, because Leo rules children, especially small children, and play. So there's a Leo flavor to 22 Aquarius where Neptune is sitting in retrograde. 22 Aquarius and the rug the child is playing on is not any rug, it's an Oriental rug. And Oriental rugs are made, the design in Oriental rugs is the design of the cosmos. So it's saying that the individual, when you take Neptune at 22 to Aquarius, the visions and dreams of this individual, which you get in playfulness, the cosmos is supporting it, because the Oriental rug under the child is the cosmos that's supporting you, and it's giving you the great visions and dreams that Neptune can give you. And it's supporting your development, Saturn and Leo. It's supporting your soul development. And all these great visions and dreams that you're being given by the cosmos are there to help you become a better world server. And so when they have an opposition, it's taking a hard look between Neptune and his fantasy, these visions, and then what's real. Out of these creative, playful visions that I have of how I can make a better world, which are, you know, which of these visions are really real? Saturn is reality. What can I truly do that will be of great service to the world? Just example, the radio program you do yourself, that's considered a form of world service. So it would be saying, if I put that in your professional life, what kind of creative daydreaming can you do and creative visions can you come up with to provide better and better service for your listening audience? And so,
well, that might be an interesting question to ask myself.
What?
I said that might be a very interesting question to ask myself. How can I do better with this? I guess.
Well, you know, that's the wonderful thing about Mercury retrograde. How can you do better? Right now is the greatest time to dream. Dream journals. Because Mercury, as guide of souls, is going to take you into the world of dreams. And it isn't a conscious thing. You have to quit trying hard. What you have to do is to surrender to it. Let the mind go into free fall. during Mercury retrograde, and then the mind will, then the soul will come up and say, well, now that you're quiet and not so busy with the left brain, I've got some things I want to share with you. And it will pop it up in dreams and little insights. It'll be very irrational, very random. This is a time where you let your mind wander when Mercury is retrograde. Then that will allow the Saturn-Neptune conjunction, which was just 48 hours ago, a little over 48 hours ago, to really do its best for you. I think it's interesting tonight that the inferior conjunction of Mercury and the Sun is going to be right in the middle between Saturn opposite Neptune and the full moon, which will be coming up here on the 30th of June. And so putting it that way says there's going to be incredible information coming up from the soul via dreams and insights. So I encourage you and all your listeners to daydream and doodle right now.
Daydream and doodle.
Right. You know, just kind of let your mind drift. Let your mind drift.
Yeah, okay.
Don't try, because things will spontaneously emerge that way. And that's the gift of Mercury retrograde, is you trust the right brain. You allow your mind to drift. And so all these...
You and I are going to be doing some radio in the up-and-coming months. I have asked Monica to come on my show once a month, and... And I was wondering, Monica, are we better to do this the first Wednesday of every month, or are we better to do this the last Wednesday of every month? Because you're going to be talking about an overview of the energies that we're going to be dealing with in the month to come. What do you think is best, the end of the month or the beginning of the month?
That's exactly the question I've been mulling over myself, and I was going to ask you, because I thought, do I do the upcoming month, the last Wednesday of the month month before, or do I start with the first Wednesday of the month in question? And I haven't really got an answer to that yet, truthfully. I think
what my senses say is that we should be having you on the last Wednesday of every month, so that you can talk about the energies that are ahead of us.
That works for me. I mean,
Does it work for you? It works
either way.
Okay.
It works either way, but if I do it the last Wednesday of the month, then we can cover the entire month. You know, I won't be missing anything in the upcoming month.
Let's do it that way.
That'd be fine.
So we'll actually, this is the last Wednesday of this month, isn't it?
You got me, trickster.
I think so. I need to take a look at my calendar,
but I believe it is.
When we start talking again here, as you're talking, I will look at my calendar and we'll see what it has to say. But I believe so. This is the 27th. This is the last Wednesday of this month.
Yeah.
What's important to us this past month, the month that we've already covered? Astrologically, what are we doing in Earth's evolution or in human evolution? What are we doing now, Monica?
For the last month, we've been working with the final pass of Neptune opposite Saturn. And it was much like I told you during your reading. We're working with getting a confrontation with reality versus our illusions. And sometimes it's reality is a relief, and other times it's a great disillusionment. It's a great disappointment. So we've been coming this last month to terms with the Saturn-Neptune opposition, which has been working all year, and this is the final pass of it. So it's been hot and heavy all June. People have been facing up
and especially for those of us that live in Arizona.
Right. They've been, that's true. Everybody's been working with their relationships or anything where they had wishful thinking and it was erroneous. They've been profoundly disillusioned with the reality principle coming in. It's been popping a number of balloons. On the positive side, many people have been rewarded. If what Saturn is reality. If the vision or dream of Neptune is solid and real, then it will be, then Saturn will show it to be real. If the vision and dream of Neptune is totally hot air and false, it will be shown to be false. Saturn will simply say, I'll show you what's really there. It's either going to be everything you dreamed
about,
of or
Saturn,
not.
Monica, my understanding from, you know, studying with Thomas Ashley Ferrand and Sanskrit mantra, because when we are 28, we actually change the ending of certain mantras. Thomas teaches that we have our first Saturn return on our 28th birthday. I was speaking
28?
With someone else last week at the store I work in, and she said, no, that isn't true. We have our first Saturn return sometime around 29, I think she said, or 30. Which is correct?
I think they're both right, and I'll tell you why I agree with that. At 28, you have Uranus trine Uranus in the chart, roughly around age 28. And at that time, and this is, I'm quoting Dane Rudyard here, but I found this to be true in my own life and in the life of my clients. At 28, Uranus trines natal Uranus, which means a bell goes off inwardly inside one's own psyche or soul. And one sort of knows, this is who I have to be. This is who I have to become. And it's that Uranus trine to natal Uranus at age 28 signals the onset of the Saturn return transition period, which in my mind runs from 28 when that bell goes off with the Uranus trine to age 32 when you finally integrated the Saturn return, the first Saturn return. The exact Saturn return astrologically is roughly at 29 and a half. If you go from Saturn from natal position back to natal position, it's 29 and a half years. So yes, if you want to get strictly astrological on the Saturn return by the chart, it's 29 and a half. But the whole period is roughly 4 years. The Saturn return period to me works between ages 28 and 32. So again,
it is said, and I think I've seen this in my own life and my client's life, that at that time period, at that age period, catastrophic things can happen. January 20th, 1980, I had just turned 30 years old, and, 25 days after turning 30, I found myself trapped in a burning car. Talk about a traumatic, dramatic, life-altering experience. So for me, that is a profound truth, and it definitely altered my existence, having had that experience. When one finds themselves trapped inside of a car that's on fire, and one definitely faces their own mortality at that moment, it's life-altering.
Yes. Yours was highly dramatic, but what I have learned is from birth to the first Saturn return in the 30th year, or time 30, you are recapitulating your previous life karma that you brought in. You're tying up the loose ends. Between the first Saturn return and the second Saturn return, between 30 and 60 years of age, you're doing the life mission you came to do. And then as your second Saturn return, between 59 and 60, you're preparing for your future. You're making big plans that you may not complete in one lifetime. Now, some people are completing those. Some people, more and more people, are living to be 90 and having their third Saturn return. There's so few of them that I haven't really had a chance to study them. You know, what are they doing? But they seem to be preparing, if they live beyond 90 and have a third Saturn return, they're preparing for something very special.
So, what do you mean?
They seem to be taking on a new level of soul existence that is beyond what the traditional Saturn returns are about. Like the first one is a recapitulation of the tying up the loose ends of your previous life in the first 30 years. 30 to 60 is where we're most focused on what we came to do and how we're living now. And the second Saturn return is making some future plans for a future life. But those people that live long enough to make a third Saturn return at roughly 89 and a half, they seem to cross over at that time into a whole new level of existence, like they're getting a new lease on life in a different way. They become much more soul beings living in the physical in a different way. They're not making plans anymore the way they would have done between 60 and 90. They're simply just being. And in that beingness, they transform themselves. That you meet someone, you say that they've finished something there that's very special, and they've started something very special. It's like they're transitioning to a whole other realm of existence beyond the regular.
What if we live our life like that? If I mean, okay, so you're armed with that piece of information, and you say, okay, then if that happens at age 90, what if I start endeavoring to just be and not make all these plans?
Which age, from the time, from any time?
Well, like right now.
Before 90?
I mean, I'm going to have a second Saturn return at 59 and a half or 60 years old, correct?
Yes, between.
So I'm 57 now. I'll be 58. So my next Saturn return is coming quickly.
Yes.
What if I say, don't let me hang around living, making all these plans, concerning myself with my future? What if I take on the mindset of the third Saturn return and say, okay, I'm going to make peace with all of it. I'm going to focus my life on the moment right now and stop all that nonsense that stresses a person. And because, Monica, I know that you know that living your life like that, what about the future? I have to plan for this. I have to get that done. I have to do a bigger radio show. I have to get my books out, blah, blah, blah. What if I stop that right now and say, let me just focus on being?
I think that would give you a very rich ending to your current Saturn return, because you're coming to the end of that. You, like you said, it's only about two more years' time for you. That would give you a very rich ending, a way to look at what you have done in this 30-year period since you turned 30, what you have done since that car wreck, and say, what have I done? How did that change my life, and what have I done with it? Because at age, when the Saturn return comes again, I think you'll be tying up, like, what did I do with that time period and how my life was altered by that car fire? What have I done?
You said that the first 30 years of our life is finishing up from the previous life.
Yes. It's details. The people you meet, the things you do, you're meeting again a lot of people, and you're tying something up. You're finishing up things you didn't get to finish. And it recapitulates a lot. I got this from Dr. Roger Wilger, working with his past life regression, and he brought that up to me because he was working with children and saying, you watch children play games, and you'll see their most dramatic and intense past lives. He was referring to watching children play, and they were playing some version of cowboys and Indians, and they were tying each other up, you know, to trees, and, you know, all sorts of things.
Uh-huh.
But he said, as I watched them, he said, I realized, because of his work, he said, I realized they were acting out what may have happened to them some other place in time. And they were playing with it. They were giggling. It was a children's game. But he said they were finishing it up. And
very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I don't think I was at all aware of that. That, you know, it's a finishing up past life things. You know,
well,
for some reason, Spirit is saying to me, you and I need to talk about the Indigo children and the Crystal children, speaking of past lives and finishing things up and missions and, you know, these children coming in that are considered Indigo or Crystal have huge missions. How are they fitting into all of this? Because I know they do.
Well, what I've read, and I've had just very little encounters here, so I'm not all that versed in it, but I will say what I know. My impression is that they come in with all this great soul consciousness and soul awareness that previous generations haven't carried that in. Previous generations have gone to sleep a bit so they could develop the ego more. These children seem to come in spiritually awake. But they also have a very difficult time coming into the earth plane because it's a lot rougher and harsher environment than they expected. So they have a lot of, they have all this mission to do and they want to do it, but they have a very difficult time dealing with the nuts and bolts, nitty gritty practicality of this world as it really is. I think they're very, very focused on the mission and how they're going to help humanity quantum leap and evolve, and they're the next upgrade of humanity. But they're being hit with a jarring reality of, wait a minute, the world has caught up with you. And so what I think they need most from parents and teachers and any kind of elder is a lot of support for helping them to really understand what this world is and the state of evolution it is in and is not in. Because maybe when they were up in the other world before they came down, it looked easy on the drawing board. And now they're finding it a lot rougher landings. This place is a little more savage than they had it, than they really knew it was.
Savage is a good word.
And they didn't really realize how emotionally abrasive it was going to be.
Yeah, I'm born in 1950, but I'll tell you what, you're describing my existence. You know, they say that the first indigos didn't start coming in until the 60s, but I sure have lived my life by, you know, if I think about the indigos and the crystals, I came into this life having a great mission and carrying a huge weight and so much to transmute. I must have had some thread or have some thread of indigo in me.
Well, what you have, I know astrologically, is between 1950 and 52 was the Saturn-Neptune conjunction in Libra, which is when you were born. And you have that conjunction in your chart. And people born during that period do have an incredible sense of mission. And they also have an incredible sensitivity to the sorrows of this world. And they're just hurriedly trying to finish something up, to burn off some karma. I've met a number of people in this age group between 50 and 52, 53, you know, that area around there.
Born in that time?
Yeah, roughly, you know, that period of time. And every time we got together, I met them all at the past life workshops, and they were all saying, we've just got to burn this karma off. You know, the Piscean age is ending. We've got to tie up all the loose ends, and we've got to be able to get everything done here, clean up our own dirty laundry in our past lives, and help the world do the same, because we're in the transition. We've got to get the dirty laundry done before the Piscean age is over and the Aquarian age begins, because we want the laundry clean, and we can't take it with us.
Right.
And there was just this desperate thing, you know, this urgency, I should say, true urgency to get it all done, and then to be aware of a tremendous responsibility to get it done. And the awareness that the Piscean age was ending, and that being born between roughly, I'd say, 1948 even to 55, that you're going to be living through the period of transition from the ending of the Piscean age to the dawning of the age of Aquarius. And that was real important, to get everything, all the loose ends tied up, so that you could go into Aquarius with a clean slate. That was the ambition of almost everyone I heard. Does that sound like your ambition?
Pardon me?
Does that sound like your ambition?
Yes. And I'm not even sure what it means to tie up all the loose ends. You know, I mean, what does that mean? What does one endeavor to do? And I guess to me it would mean to awaken to my fullest potential, to understand how life is created and how, you know, I am but a microcosm of the macrocosm, and whatever I think and feel creates the nature of my reality. And that, and I don't know how else to understand tying up loose ends.
What I got from people with something like that was to be all you can be, because that's Pluto and Leo generation. By the way, the Pluto in the chart denotes the generation. And Pluto and Leo wants to be exact. You just gave the best definition of Pluto and Leo. I want to use all my potential and be all I can be and develop myself and express all my God-given creativity. But one thing I found is that when they want to transition is they want to leave behind some of the negative mindsets of the Piscean age, clean that up, heal it, and then being able to enter Aquarius with this new mental clarity around emotions, mental clarity around emotional maturity and perception and soul awareness. Mental clarity and soul awareness. It's like get the fog out of, you know, get the fog out. Or the
muddle. Yeah, get the fog out.
Yeah.
Monica, is death in the chart? And if so, can we change it?
Yes, death is in the chart. We can alter only so many timelines. There is an ultimate time when we need to die, and there's no way out of it. We can alter it to a point. We can alter it saying if we have a special mission and we need to complete that, we can get extensions. We can change things slightly. But ultimately, the chart will show the parameters around one's death, and one looks at the fourth house for that.
In the fourth house?
Yeah. They'll give some ideas. You can get some, you have some wiggle room, is what I'm saying. But we're all mortal.
Well, what is in the fourth house that shows
the death?
Well,
it's usually the planetary, the sign on the house cusp. That would say something. I believe you have 8 degrees Sagittarius. We'll use your chart. In the fourth house, and it's,
okay.
and your Sagittarius on the fourth house cusp, the Nadir, is Sagittarius 8, which is the door of heaven is open, and that's the Hebrew letter Dalet. Yep, Dalet, the fourth letter, means the door.
Oh, Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet. Okay.
Yeah, Dalet. I said Dalet.
Yes.
Sorry.
Dalet.
Yeah,
I had to go through it there in order to get
okay.
that.
Well, it's equivalent.
Dalet,
8 degrees. Hey,
Bob,
your fourth house is related to the Hebrew letter Dalet. So it says when the door of heaven opens at a certain time, and everything else has to be in position, it's just not one thing, then you'll be called through. And it'll be correct. It'll be the right time for you to go back through the heavenly door.
So can you tell what year, how old I will be when I pass?
No, I really can't. I really can't.
Okay.
I can see with like some Saturn transits to your planets that you're in a time when I would recommend you don't try anything reckless. Or there'll be some periods where you need some special protection. But no, I really can't.
In this next time to come, in a close time now?
Yes, I probably could take a look at your chart and say, there's some serious moments coming up for you. You know, this is not a time to be foolish with your life.
Really?
And see, yeah. But I can't predict exactly when you're going to die.
Should you and I have a talk about that when we're off air?
Yes, I think we should. Because you're a Capricorn person ruled by Saturn, and so the whole thing is about timing for you, divine time. You're, as a Capricorn Sun person, you deal with time as minutes and days and seconds, linear time, and then you deal with cosmic time. You deal with both levels of time simultaneously.
Okay.
And so,
well, this interests me. I want to know what you mean by that, because I'm kind of not understanding. So,
well, there's the linear time, which is left brain.
No, but I mean these times that I have to be careful of.
Well, it's usually I'm looking at transits over your natal chart, your natal planets like your sun or your moon. I've found that the most strong indicator of death is I'm just going to give general examples here. Saturn conjuncting a natal sun, Saturn squaring a natal sun, Saturn opposing a natal sun. Those are things that I've actually seen in people's death charts.
And do I have that coming soon?
Well, let me just hold on here. I'm putting you up on the screen here on my computer. Mostly what I think you have to work with is currently is your second, you know, preparing for your second Saturn return, which I think you're also in the middle of having your second Uranus trine Uranus, which is, you know, as I said, it's setting you up to go through to finish off this 30-year period of Saturn and prepare for the next 30-year period of Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And well, for example, right now, looking at your chart, you have Uranus opposite your natal Saturn. So it's definitely taking a time that you're going to make some breakthroughs with some blockages in your life. And it means abrupt endings and beginnings. And since it's opposing from the seventh in your first house, you know, I'd be saying that you may have some surprising events come suddenly upon you. So I'd be looking to just say, be prepared for the unexpected.
And do you think I'm going to have a good time with this, or am I going to have a not-so-good time?
Well, as we talked about before, the Uranus is opposing your natal Saturn, so it's about you freeing yourself up from blockages that have blocked your personal self-expression for a long time. Those blockages are coming up, and you're having techniques and understanding that will free you. You know, it's time to get out of jail.
Oh, it is time to get out of the jail. Monica, we are at the end of our show, and I want to just look at my book here for a minute. Would you be willing to come back on? Are you busy on the 4th of July? I mean, I know it's a holiday, but there's so much more that I really would like to talk with you about. And Sandra Rose was telling me of some things that you really have an in-depth knowledge of. So, you know, off the radio, we'll talk about that. But are you busy on July 4th?
I could be here on the 4th. I'm not going anywhere. Do you want me the same time, 10:30 at night or 9:30?
No, I think I'm going to bring you on earlier because I think we have some really good stuff to talk about.
Okay.
So how about
I'm available
if I give you a call tomorrow and we, you know, talk about some things that we're going to talk about and just I'm really letting the folks out there listening to us this evening know that you're going to be back on next week.
Oh, well, thank you.
So if that's good for you, then
yes,
you and I
is.
Will talk tomorrow, and we'll set up what we're going to talk about, and you'll be back next Wednesday because there's too much good stuff here, and I'm not finished yet.
Okay, well, I'm glad you all enjoyed it.
Well, absolutely. And, Monica, did you want to give the 303-665-4675 number
yes,
as a contact number for people that might like a reading?
Yeah, my phone number is 303-665-4675. And
yes.
I'm listed.
And your email address again?
And my email address is thesabian, T-H-E, lowercase, then capitalize Sabian, S-A-B-I-A-N, at webtv.net.
All right. I want to thank you so much, Monica, and you and I will talk tomorrow, and you'll be back on next Wednesday.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
It's good radio.
Yes, it is.
All
good
right.
Night, everyone.
Thanks so much, Monica, and we'll be talking again soon. So
My pleasure. Good evening
for now.
Okay. Bye.
And I want to thank Dr. Sandra Rose Michael for giving us the opportunity to be on the air every week. I don't know what happened to her. Maybe she just came on long enough to say aloha because she likes to do that. And she is way overworked right now. She's got so much happening with the July 7th kickoff of the Freedom for Life that we've been talking about. If you want more information, IAB, freedomforlife.com. And, of course, the ID number is 87803. Get on there and find out what we've been talking about. I want to thank you all for joining me. Please come back to Talk Truth Radio next Wednesday night and take with you for this next week my blessings. Good evening.
The talk radio you have just enjoyed is brought to you by Dr. Sandra Rose Michael and Energy Enhancement Systems. Have a very blessed week, and please join us next Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific Time when we return with more exciting talk. To find out more about the host and sponsor, visit drrainmorgan.com and energyenhancementsystems.com.